Well, thank you for the introduction. As was pointed out, I do a fair amount of work before the North Dakota Industrial Commission Oil and Gas Division. So I've been requested to provide you with an update on recent important matters that have taken place before the Industrial Commission Oil and Gas Division. If any of you look at the docket sheets that come out on a monthly basis, you'll see that the Industrial Commission has approximately 2 hearings a month. Most of those hearings have to do with spacings, poolings, saltwater disposal wells, increased density wells, central tank batteries, that sort of thing. Those are pretty mundane things, pretty routine with the Industrial Commission, so I'm going to try to focus on something a little bit different. I want to talk a little bit about unitization statutory changes and notable orders of the Commission, as well as some things that have happened before the Industrial Commission relative to revocation of permits. With respect to unitization and statutory changes that have taken place, my plan is to talk just a little bit about the types of unitization we have in North Dakota in terms of voluntary unitization and compulsory unitization, and then I'll talk a little bit about some of the cases that the Commission has heard recently with respect to primary units versus secondary and tertiary recovery units. In terms of unitization generally, as I noted, the statutory mechanism in North Dakota is provides for 2 types of unitization, voluntary unitization and compulsory unitization. Voluntary unitization is, as it would appear, is when all of the owners, working interest owners, royalty owners, overriding royalty owners, can get together and make a decision for unitization of a field. Compulsory unitization is if you can get if you can get approval by the Industrial Commission for unitization, and then you can get a certain percentage of commitment from the royalty owners and a certain percentage of commitment from the working interest owners, the Commission will then force pool or force unitize the remaining persons, utilizing a word from bankruptcy. It's basically a cram down procedure that if you can get a certain percentage, the Commission will enter an order requiring the other working interest owners and royalty owners to go along. Voluntary unitization came into play in North Dakota when the conservation statutes were adopted in the late 40s, early 50s. Compulsory unitization is something more recent. It came into play when the legislature adopted a statute back in 1965. The requirements for unitization are that the unitization is necessary for the operations contemplated by the operator. The unitization operations are feasible, meaning it's going to work, and unitization costs less than the value of the additional oil and gas that's going to be recovered from the operation. And then finally, unitization is for the common good. In terms of compulsory unit approval, as I indicated earlier, it requires a certain percentage of approval by the working interest owners and a certain percentage of approval by the royalty owners. In compulsory unitization, you do not need the approval by the overriding royalty owners. It's only the royalty owners and the working interest owners. Back in 1965, when the statute was adopted, the requirement was for 80% of the working interest owners excuse me, to approve the plan of unitization as well as 80% of the royalty owners. Now, there's been some changes to that in the past few years, primarily because operators found it difficult to get that 80%. So in, I believe it was in 1991, the legislature changed the percentage of percentage of ratification required for unitization from 80% to 70% for both working interest owners and royalty owners. The reason for the industry petitioning or requesting that the legislature change this this ratification requirement was they were having some difficulty after the failure of some of the Burke County units in the late 80s in getting royalty interest owners to approve at the 80% level, so they sought the change, and the legislature agreed to the change. In 2001, industry went back to the legislature again, and as a result of some unitization projects that were in the process down in Burke County, or excuse me, down in Bowman County, North Dakota, industry again sought a reduction of the percentage of ownership required for the ratifications from 70% down to 60%. It's kind of interesting to note that at that time, Attorney General Heitkamp was suggesting that maybe it should even be lower, maybe it should be 50% or 51%. We were too far down the line in trying to get that change, so we stayed at 60%. And it was a result of this this change from 60% that we ultimately were able to unitize the Cedar Hills Red River Bee Pool down in Bowman County, North Dakota. I'll be getting into this in a little bit on another topic. But there was a large dispute between Burlington Resources, Oil and Gas Company LP, as well as Continental Resources, Inc., as to the type of unitization that should take place down in that area. Continental Resources wanted to inject air. Burlington wanted to inject water. There was disputes as to how the field should be broken up. I believe that if the percentage had been not been reduced to 60%, that unit probably would have never been formed. It's been formed. The Continental unit, I believe, is in the neighborhood of 30-some thousand acres. The Burlington unit is a little bit smaller. They have since conveyed that unit to another operator, Denbury, and Denbury is planning on building a CO2 line from Wyoming into North Dakota and injecting CO2 into that field. So the unitization process that took place back in early 2000 and the fact that the legislature agreed with the industry that it should be reduced to from 70% to 60% was pretty important for that field at the time, and it's going to be pretty important in the future as a result of CO2 coming into the area. In 2017, industry went back to the legislature one more time and requested that the percentage be reduced again, this time from 60% to 55%. Both for working interest owners and royalty owners. That was primarily a result of one operator who was having some trouble getting the necessary percentages in a unit up in, I believe it was Renville County or Botno County, North Dakota. So that's where we're at right now in terms of the requirement for unitization. As a comparison, Montana is still at 80% and South Dakota is still at 80%. So it is quite a bit easier in North Dakota to get a unit formed with the 55% ratification than it is in Montana and South Dakota. As I mentioned earlier, there's two types of units in North Dakota. There's primary recovery units and there are secondary recovery units. In a primary recovery unit, talking about a situation where you're putting a unit together, but you're not going to be injecting any fluids into the reservoir to enhance the recovery. I'll be talking a little bit more about this, why you would put together a primary recovery unit if you're not going to be injecting any substances. But a secondary recovery unit is a recovery unit where you're injecting gas or water into the reservoir, and a tertiary recovery unit would be something like CO2 or polymers or things like that that might enhance the recovery of the oil and gas in the pool. All the voluntary units and compulsory units that have been established in North Dakota until very recently have been secondary recovery units. It was only very recently that two units were established that were primary units. The first was the Little Missouri Pier unit, which is located in Bowman County, and I believe it stretches across the border into Montana. And that unit is a very shallow gas unit. It was probably producing gas in North Dakota in the early 1900s. It was first drilled out by I guess MDU, and then they sold it to another company. But the Little Missouri Pierre unit was to the point where it was about ready to be plugged out if they could not reduce some of the costs and expenses of the unit. Just the cost of having meters on all the wells was such that it added a lot of expense to the field. So the operator of the unit proposed a primary unit so that all the gas could come out of the wells and then just go to one meter, and then it would be allocated back to the various owners of tracts in the unit. The other more recent primary unit is the Corral Creek Bakken unit. It was the first Bakken unit in North Dakota, and once again, no injection of any substances into the reservoir. But the reason for unitizing that field was it's located in a state park, and Burlington Resources Oil and Gas Company, which is the operator of that unit at the time, found it very difficult to find locations in the unit because of setbacks for spacing units, park facilities and that sort of thing. So it was unitized to give Burlington Resources Oil and Gas Company an opportunity to have more flexibility with respect to drilling of wells. Talk a little bit about the trends toward more primary units in 2018 and 2019. XTO has made application to the Industrial Commission for the Hufflin-Bakken unit, and Continental Resources has made application to the Industrial Commission for the Long Creek-Bakken unit. The hearings on both of these cases have been held. The Hufflin-Bakken unit was created by the Industrial Commission after the hearing, and XTO has received the necessary ratifications, and that unit has been formed, and I believe it became effective on March 1. Continental Resources Long Creek Bakken unit, the application has been filed, a hearing has been held, and right now Continental is seeking the necessary ratifications. Talk a little bit more specifically about primary units. A question might be going through someone's mind out there is, why put together a primary unit if you're not going to inject additional substances into the ground and produce more oil and gas that way? But I think this example will give you an idea of just what's going on, as well as the examples I gave you on Pierre Creek, as well as the Corral Creek. XTO's application for the Hufflin-Bakken unit, the proposed unit area was approximately 26,000 acres. There were 34 existing wells in that proposed unit, and the proposed unit area was north of portions of Lake Sakakawea. And one of the reasons they wanted to put this unit together is they felt they needed more flexibility to drill these long reach horizontal wells under Lake Sakakawea. As you can see, this is probably not the greatest map, but you can see the topography here is very rough around the lake. And once again, they needed the flexibility to locate wells because of that topography. And then finally, there's just been more and more effort to push operators back from the shores of the lake. The tribe has adopted certain rules where the lake is on a reservation, and state and federal agencies are also trying to get operators far away from the lake but still allow development under the lake. This is a depiction of what will likely happen now that this unit has been formed. You can see that XTO estimates between 100 and 150 additional wells are going to be drilled in this area. They're estimating approximately $1 billion in capital will be invested to drill these wells. There'll be an additional 150 million barrels of oil that will be recovered, and XTO is estimating, of course, depending on the price, but at the time, that additional $4 billion in revenue will be derived. It's probably a little bit difficult to see, but you can see that you do get a lot more flexibility if you can eliminate those spacing unit boundaries inside the unit area. If this was going to be developed on the basis of spacing units, we couldn't drill as many wells as being proposed here, and there'd be different setbacks between the spacing unit boundaries. So this does allow for better development of the pool.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Okay, the next unit I want to talk a little bit about, as I mentioned it early, is the Long Creek unit. This is the Continental Resources unit. In this unit, talking about approximately 6,000 acres of land, quite a bit smaller than the XTO unit. Right now, there's five existing wells in that unit. Once again, the proposed unit areas on the shores of Lake Sakakawea need to drill long-reach horizontal Bakken wells. This is a structure map. Now, I didn't have a terrain map, but the terrain is about as rough in this area as it is in the other field that XTO is drilling in. And also, once again, we're talking about a situation where we have state agencies and federal agencies trying to push operators as far away from the lake as possible for environmental reasons. And here's a diagram of what full development is going to look like in this area. As I indicated earlier, five wells drilled now. They'll probably drill an additional 56 wells. $461 million of capital would likely be invested. 33 million barrels of oil recovered, and approximately $1.6 million in additional revenue. So primary units are being considered by other Bakken operators. I think we're going to see more of this, particularly around Lake Sakakawea, because of some of the issues with the lake. The commission is not particularly keen on primary units. You have to demonstrate, in addition to all the other factors that are in the statute, certain other criteria, and that's the terrain is challenging, which was certainly the case in the two units I discussed earlier. Uniform porosity, permeability, and that. And let me just talk a little bit about that. The reason the commission is interested in having uniformity with respect to the reservoir is it would become very difficult if you had a good part of the reservoir and a bad part of the reservoir unitized into one in terms of coming up with a formula as to how the oil and gas would be allocated in and under the unit. The other thing that the commission looks into on that is uniform development in the unit before unitization is formed. As you noted in that one, there were five wells in that particular unit. There were five spacing units, so we had uniform development because there was one well in each one of the spacing units. That's important from the standpoint of if you had five or six wells in one spacing unit and no wells in another spacing unit, once again, it becomes difficult for the commission to allocate production from the unit as a whole. A lot of oil would have been produced out of one spacing unit, yet you got another spacing unit that hasn't produced a lot of oil. So there's a real problem in trying to equitably divide oil that's produced when you have that inequity at the beginning. In addition, a very important part, and this was very important in the Corral Creek, is that the operator, when they come in for a primary unit, they have to have plans for uniform development of the field. If you have a situation where, let's go back to the one, the XTO unit, where they're going to drill, you know, approximately 100 or 150 wells. If they were to drill all those wells on the east side of the unit and no wells on the west side of the unit, the commission would have problems with that because they wouldn't think that would be fair. You should be having uniform development over the unit as a whole. In terms of primary units, as I've indicated, the commission has added certain criteria to its requirements before they will allow these units to be formed. But generally speaking, they're getting ratified. The state of North Dakota seems receptive to approving primary units, I think primarily because of the increased development, the additional oil that will be recovered, and what that means for revenue to the state of North Dakota. And in fact, they did approve both the Huffland Bakken unit and the, or ratified the Huffland Bakken unit and the Long Creek Bakken unit. The federal government also seems to be receptive to approving these units, and they have approved the Hofflin unit. We are still waiting to hear from them on the Long Creek unit. Well, the next subject I was going to talk about without slides, I'll just try to do it without it, is suspension and revocation of drilling permits. This has actually been a subject that has been going on with the Industrial Commission for a number of years. It was a result of activity down in Bowman County, once again the Cedar Hills Red River Bee Pool. And when activity was taking place down there in the early 2000s, Continental Resources and Burlington Resources were very active in drilling wells, very active in determining who should be operators of wells. Both Continental and Burlington thought it was important to be the operator because they were drilling wells differently, and a battle ensued as to who should be the operator of wells, and the battle took place in terms of permitting. And Continental and Burlington were going out and just securing every permit they could get and submitting them to the commission, and it was basically a race to the Industrial Commission offices as to who got the permit first. And it wasn't the best way for development for the commission to make a determination as to operatorship based on who got to their offices first. So in the early 2000s, the commission came up with a rule having to do with permitting, and that rule provided for certain criteria to determine who should be the operator, who should have a permit on a well. The first criteria was who had the best techniques for drilling the well, or who had the greater technical ability for permitting. And then there was experience in of the operator. Obviously, technical ability. You want the person who has the greatest technical ability drilling the wells. Experience, presumably, if you've drilled 100 wells, horizontal Bakken wells, you're probably going to be a better operator than if you drill one or none. And the number of wells in the area was also a criteria. The reason that's important to the Industrial Commission is if you have a number of wells in the area, you're probably going to have the infrastructure in place to obtain the gas or sell the gas so you don't have flaring. And then there was contractual obligations was another thing the commission looked into, is if a operator or a permit holder had a contractual obligation and the other permit holder did not, they would like to see the permit go to the person who has the contractual obligation so that the well can get drilled and leases don't expire. And then finally, the commission looked at percentage of ownership. And they looked at that from the standpoint of the party or operator or permit holder that by itself or with the support of other working interest owners had the majority interest was presumed to be the best operator and would hold the permit. Fortunately, the commission has been very consistent with respect to that criteria, and initially there were lots of applications brought before the Industrial Commission on who should be the permit holder, but because of their consistency and because they primarily relied on that objective test of the operator with the majority interest being the operator, parties started to see what the commission was going to do, and that resulted in a lot less applications being filed with the commission. Now, more recently, what has been happening is some new things have developed with respect to disputes over permits. And one of the more recent cases that I handled, it's over with now, so I can talk about it. But there was a 1,280-acre spacing unit, excuse me, and PetroShale was the operator of the 640-acre section in the north part of the 1280, and EOG was the operator of the section of in the south half of the 1,280-acre spacing unit. PetroShale permitted a well in the 1280, but the 640-acre spacing unit that was operated by EOG had an operating agreement, and that operating agreement provided that only EOG could be the operator. PetroShale, as I indicated, permitted a well. EOG brought an application to the commission asking that the permit be revoked, and also brought an action in State District Court asking for a temporary restraining order preventing PetroShale from drilling the well. At the time of the hearing for the preliminary injunction, the court ruled that it did not have jurisdiction to be making a determination as to who the operator should be under the JOA, that was a decision that should be made by the Industrial Commission. I think the district court got it wrong. We went back to the Industrial Commission, filed a motion for summary judgment indicating that the district court had indicated that they were the agency to be making that determination. The Industrial Commission agreed with what I just said and said, no, that's for the district court to determine. Before we were able to get a decision out of the district court as to whether the JOA governed the entire 1,280-acre spacing unit, the parties reached an agreement where they took the 1,280-acre spacing unit and they basically split it in half. They established two 640-acre spacing units stand-up so that east half was going to be operated by EOG, west half was going to be operated by PetroShale. One other situation the commission has encountered recently, a little bit unique with respect to revocation of permits, was a situation in which QEP and WPX were involved in a situation that I think we're going to see more and more in the future as more and more wells are drilled. And the situation there was, I'll just give you an example, Section 1 and 12 was a 1,280-acre spacing unit operated by WPX. Sections 13 and 24 were a 1,280-acre spacing unit operated by QEP. So imagine basically four sections stacked on top of one another, the top 1,280 operated by QEP, by WPX, the bottom one operated by QEP. There weren't any surface locations available in the QEP 1,280-acre spacing unit, so it located its surface location in the WPX spacing unit. WPX brought an application before the commission, said, we're going to have problems with that location. It's going to result in us not being able to fully develop because of anti-collision issues where our well bores are going to cross their well bores. I wish this were working because I had some examples of how all that worked out. But ultimately, we heard the case before the commission. Before the commission had an opportunity to reach a decision, the parties reached a settlement agreement, and the matter was resolved. But as more and more wells are drilled, as wells are drilled in areas where there just aren't any surface locations, we're going to see more and more situations where operators are going to want to locate their surface locations of their wells on spacing units that they don't operate. And that's going to cause some of the issues that I just mentioned. So